Thanks for having me here. So you're here today. I'm going to talk about work in progress. You can see the guy drinking water and not really doing work, which is basically me. And what I want to talk about is whether or not inflation really inflates. This is work done with Katie Clough, who's my PhD student, who's really good. So hire her. And Rafael Flogger, and a student in UT Texas, Brandon DeNono. Okay, so inflation, right? So this is the Alan Goof famous paper, and in the second line of his abstract, he says that the Earth universe assumes to be highly homogeneous and is not nice, not good, not a nice thing to have. So we want the inflations to make it homogeneous dynamically. So, but if inflation needs to be homogeneous, then you need initial, you know, homogeneous initial conditions to inflate. Then it sort of defeats its own purpose. So this is the question that we want to ask here. And this is what this is like a talk very closely related to Leonardo's talk a couple of days ago. So some prior work on this topic. So what I'm going to talk about is just try to see whether or not inflation actually inflates using numerical relativity. So and this work has been done like maybe a couple 20 years ago. The first work that I know of is done by Goff and Piran, which look at 1 plus 1D spherical collapse of scalar fields or the inflaton field in expanding distributed background. And this is done in 1989. And this is a pretty famous work. But a less famous work, and I think not so famous, is the work done by Laguna, Kurki, Socinio, and Massner in 1991, where they actually look at inhomogeneous initial scalar field configuration in 3 plus 1 numerical relativity. So this guy's been doing it like 20 years. I mean, I wasn't even in physics yet. I was like in diapers, I think. And both this result gave the so-called quote-unquote canonical result, which has been quoted by many, many people since then, which is that space-time needs to be homogeneous around a patch of H, of Hubble patch of H-act, which means H-actual. And, you're a lifesaver.
So plug that in.
Okay. Thanks a lot. Right. Technology, hey. Here we go. Ooh. I am a Luddite. I think a laser pointer worked, but okay. All right, so H-actual is the actual Hubble horizon. It's kind of a length scale, which is given by this formula, right? So it's basically a Freeman equation with not just the vacuum energy, V phi naught, but the gradient energy and the kinetic energy of the scalar field. So this is the canonical result, if you like. Where, sorry?
Divide Lorentz symmetry.
Oh, no, OK, above.
You're not?
I know. I think I blame the people who do Galilean modified gravity, because they always have this term. It's all their fault. All right, OK. So more newer work, the talks given by Leonardo and William is last year, which is very interesting, right? So they did actual numerical relativity simulations starting with inhomogeneous scalar field configuration, and then they find that large inflation is robust to large sub-Hubble gradient energies, and they have really large gradient energy. The gradient energy that they put in is 1,000 of the vacuum energy, so basically the gradient energy dominates. And they stick it in a curd, and they let it run, and lo and behold, inflation happens. So it's very, very robust. And so today I'm going to talk about this and do a little bit more, so hopefully I'm not repeating what he's saying. Okay, so this is this work. So I don't have theorems, so I'm gonna be very simple-minded, and my simple-minded lowbrow question is the following, right? So I'm given an inflating potential, so some scalar field potential, and with the inflaton situated around inflating potential, so we know we set the inflaton, put it there where it's actually inflating, but now with some non-trivial scatter. So the scalar field is no longer just sitting at one point everywhere, it's not coherent, it has some gradients, and the question is, can you still inflate? So the answer is yes. No. So the answer is yes, that the inflation is actually very, very hard to kill. So we want to ask the question in a different way, which is that what does it take to kill inflation, right? So what kind of stuff do you need to put in? How badly do you need to screw up the initial condition to get inflation not to work? And does this robustness depend on what kind of inflation models? And the models, inflation has, it's like, it has so many models. It's an infinite number of models. The number of models is more, it's bigger than the landscape of potential models. But I'm going to split it up into a large and small field inflation. I'll argue that this is actually a good way of splitting up the number, the type of class of models of inflations. And also, I'm going to consider not just initially expanding, uniform expanding spacetime, but also mixed spacetime. And you can see that contracting spacetime, initially contracting spacetime, is actually kind of trivial. And what I'll call, quote unquote, successful inflation, right, modular or measure questions, is that some part of the Hubble volume inflate. That's my very naive way of thinking that inflation works.
So
it's
inflated by 60-fold, or just inflate for?
Okay, so it would be nice if you can simulate up to 60-folds, but usually we end around 20-folds, because now numerically, you know, it's just very hard to keep track of it, because the numbers become very small.
Is it inflated more than 20-folds?
That's, yeah, 20-folds is what I consider, or 25, depending on how much code we use, how much resources we throw at it. Okay, so what can kill inflation? Right, so here's the regular inflationary potential. I stole this from Daniel Bauman's lecture notes. And here's the potential. The x-axis is the potential VFI, the y-axis is the potential, x-axis is the scalar field. And then you have this very flat plateau where the inflaton phi actually rolls, and then it rolls for some region, delta phi. So capital delta phi is the region of the plateau that is flat enough for the inflation to happen. And inflation has to end sometime, so eventually it will fall into this little bottom of this potential. It will oscillate, and we call this reheating. Right? This is like the canonical version of what inflation would be. So if you write down energy density of this scalar field, you have the vacuum energy, and then you have the gradient energy. If it's not homogeneous, you have gradient energy, and then you have the kinetic energy, phi dot square. This is all very heuristic, by the way. So if you want, what you want is to get rid of this kinetic and gradient energy. So how does inflation does this? First, you say that the scalar field is rolling very, very slowly. So phi dot is small, so this becomes zero, and we call it slow roll, as we all know. And then the other thing is that you want no gradient energy, so you want to get rid of that too. So you just say, okay, it's homogeneous initially, or homogeneous, it needs to be homogeneous for it to be actually inflate. So if you like, inflation requires not just slow roll, but coherent slow roll. So the slowly rolling must be coherent across the Hubble patch, if you like. So it's all very, you know, this is all known. So, but there's some hard and fast rules about how energy densities dilute in the distributed spacetimes. And these are hard and fast rules, right? So vacuum energy is constant, so it goes like constant. Kinetic energy, you know, it's called, if you like, kination, is scales like a to the minus six, so it gets killed very, very quickly, right? So it scales like a to the minus six. You know, you put a little bit of kinetic energy, it'll be gone very, very quickly. The gradient energy depends on whether it's long wavelength mode or short wavelength mode, but at short wavelength modes, it goes like a to the minus four, so it varies between minus four to minus five, but again, it dilutes very, very quickly. So since inflation wants to kill everything, right, it's no mercy. It kills everything except vacuum energy. We have to work really hard to kill it. So we'll try to kill it. Okay, so what can kill inflation? So there are a couple of mechanisms that I want to talk about, right? So if you think about it, say, okay, well, how do you stop inflation from happening? You think about slow roll, you think about coherence. So one way to get kill it is to say, okay, well, maybe you can stop it from slowly rolling. So I'll call it the pit of doom mechanism. So the idea is that you start with some Hubble patch of roughly homogeneous spacetime. Then you have this little red patch where some inhomogeneity lives, right? So if it is like this little pinkish red patch is where this the scalar field varies along this little region, right? So you have some delta phi, you have some gradient terms. And the hope is that even if you start the inflating region around this plateau, even though your gradient is still all in the inflating regime, there's maybe some back reaction dynamics of the scalar field and the gravity will actually push it into the reheating regime. So if you like, oops, you move it a little bit, so some part of it grows, but some part of the homogeneities get inflated away, but some parts might grow, so it's like this patch now varies along a much larger gradient, and then it falls in. So once it falls in, you hope that this looks like kind of like a bubble. So you hope that there's a pressure difference between the bottom of the potential with the top of the potential, and then this will grow and eventually pull the rest of the scalar field from its inflating regime, right? So it grows and it eats up the entire universe. So this is one mechanism, right? This is the pit of doom. The other mechanism is the giant death black hole. And the idea is that, yeah, I can make a black hole from large inhomogeneity. So if you like, this is a Hubble patch. This is the, like the length scale defined by the vacuum Hubble length. So if you like the Hubble scale, oh wow, this is HV minus one, right? So this is 1/HV is the Hubble scale defined by the vacuum energy. So if I take away the gradient energy, take away the kinetic energy, this will be the Hubble volume or the Hubble length scale. So it's some length scale. So I create some patch here. I can make a black hole. I can start with some inhomogeneities that's big enough. It will just collapse by, you know, chopsticks collapse, if you like. And we collapse and make a black hole. So here's a ginormous death black hole. And then it will affect the dynamics of the scalar field around some region. And you can calculate what is, or you can estimate what is the size of the black hole you need to actually kill inflation. If you like to eat up the entire space-time, then you'll be not really a many, many black holes. It's just the universe is just one ginormous contracting universe. And you find that, okay, you need a black hole that is about this size. Right? So these are two mechanisms that we can try to inflict on inflation to kill it. So I'm going to talk about two things. I'm going to separate the talks into two cases that we are looking at. So one, we're going to look at how robust is inflation to a large field as large and small field inflation to this kind of attacks, right? If is small field inflation more robust, large field inflation more robust, how is it? And the other question that we want to ask is that how robust is inflation to initial expansion? You know, if this universe is expanding initially, what happens if it's not expanding uniformly, but there's some space expanding faster than the other? What happens if some space expanding and some space contracting? So, you know, what's going on? So we're going to ask those questions. Okay, so small and large field inflation. So what it is? So for cosmologists, this is obvious. For people who are not cosmology, I'll give you a sort of very short background. So the idea is the following. So the idea is that there's a thing called a life bound, and it says that the amplitude of the scalar perturbation, which we have observed on a CMB, is 10 to the minus 10. And sufficient inflation, you want inflation to occur sufficient number of EFOs, 60 EFOs at least, imposes some traverse condition on the inflaton field. So if you like, you need the inflaton field, you need the potential to be flat across some big, some region, some domain, such that you can get the right scalar amplitude and sufficient inflation. And the idea is the following. So the scalar amplitude, delta square R, which is 10 to the minus 10, which we measured, is given by this formula. It's just the scale of inflation times 1 over epsilon, where epsilon is the slow roll parameter. So epsilon small means the inflaton rolls very slowly. Epsilon big, it rolls very quickly. So if you can see this from this very simple equation, that if h squared over m Planck squared, if the scale of inflation is large or small, then the inflaton has to roll faster or slower. So this is pretty easy to see. So if you look at, then if you then calculate, since if it rolls faster, then it needs more space. You know, if it rolls slower, then it needs less space. Right, so you can calculate what is the amount of total field traverse, capital delta 5, to be equal to this formula, which n is the number of EFOs, and h over m Planck, again, is the scale inflation, times 10 to the minus 5, 10 to the 5, this comes from the scalar amplitude. And it's not hard to see that if you have high scale inflation, if h over m Planck is big, then delta 5 is super Planckian. So delta 5 is much bigger than m Planck. And we call these kind of models large field inflation. So for low scale inflation, where inflation occurs at a lower, much lower energy scale than the gut scale, then you can see that delta phi is less than, is smaller than M Planck, it's sub Planckian, and we call this small field inflation. Right, so if you look at this, so if you like this delta phi is so delta phi is big when it's large field and delta phi is small when it's small field. And you can sort of intuitively start to ask questions, right? So okay, maybe small field, you know, if you put gradients on it, maybe small field is less robust, and your intuition will be correct. Okay, so we're gonna do numerical GR, and this is the obligatory advertisement plot. So this is we spent a few years writing this code that does numerical GR. You know, it runs on BSSN, CCC4 formalism. We use the Schomburg libraries, which means that we inherit all this nice stuff like the block structure adaptive mesh with subcycling, and we hope to release it end of the year or soon, trademark, right? So we are running into mission creep as usual, trying to put too many features in. So okay, so initial setup. So we want to set up the gravity psi and the scalar psi. So the gravity psi is just here's the ADM matrix. So alpha is just the lapse, And shift is the beta I is the shift. So these are, if you like, the last name shift parameters. And most of the physics is encoded into the tree matrix, so gamma ij. So it's initial. We're going to start initial. Our initial condition is for simplicity and easiness of finding initial conditions. We're going to assume that it's flat, right? So if you like, the gamma ij initially is just defined by some scalar chi I. Do you like think of this as some gravitational potential? And the extreme curvature Kij is initially trace-free, so again makes things easy for us to solve the initial constraints equation, so we can find initial conditions that we can run. And then we choose the gauge condition, alpha 1 and beta I equals 0. And if you are a numerical GR aficionado, then you know that you need to evolve this guy so that you evade things like singularities when black holes form. And these are the gauge driver's condition. All these numbers are all, you know, you tune this mu, alpha, nu alpha 1, nu alpha 2, and all these numbers by just doing a million simulation and see which one works. Basically, it's kind of magic. Okay, so, and the scalar setup. So we're going to start with some inhomogeneous scalar profile. So here's the scalar field profile, phi t of x. Phi naught is just the homogeneous background, and we choose phi naught such that you get 100 EFOs if there's no inhomogeneity. So if you like, if we set all the inhomogeneity to 0, inflation is going to happen for 100 EFOs. So we choose phi naught to be that value. Give you sufficient space for wiggle room so that when things go belly up, you have some space. And then you put in some long wavelength mode, some inhomogeneous component. So L is some fixed length scale, not necessarily the Hubble scale. It depends on which model or which kind of simulations we're doing. So we're going to set L to be whatever it is. We could put more and more modes to it if you like. So you can put as many inhomogeneous modes as we like. But usually one or two is enough. And then we set the kinetic term most of the time, not all the time, where the kinetic term eta, which just equals to 0. So this is, like, if you like, the gauge invariant kinetic term, although that's actually a very bad way to say it. And then once we have done this, we solve for the gravitational potential for the initial metric configuration using relaxation. So we relax the true solution, and then we turn on the simulation, and we run and see what happens. Okay, and numerically, so we have adaptive mesh, so we're going to we use about 6 to 8 refinement levels, so we can refine. You know, when black hole forms, we want it not to break, so we have some refinement there. And refinement ratio is 2 per level, and we threshold it with K, which is the intrinsic curvature. And think of this basically like the Hubble scale, you know, if you are a cosmologist, and the scalar field. So if you like, we decide whether or not we want to put more grid mesh or more mesh in when K, the gradients of K of phi are big. We use periodic boundary conditions, and the simulation domain is an interesting choice. So we can do whether or not this box, the size of a simulation box, to be the size of the Hubble volume, the actual Hubble volume, so it's small, or the Hubble volume where it would be if the universe is inflating, right? So this is a much bigger box. This scale is the scale associated with inflating space-time, and this scale is associated with the space-time with all the other energies thrown in. So this H is much smaller, or this H is much bigger, and so the length scale is much smaller than HV. But having said that, right, if you start with an inhomogeneous initial state, these are just convenient length scale. They, if you like, don't mean a thing unless you are a cosmologist. So they're just convenient length scale. This tells us what kind of box we want to use. And we'll choose whichever HV or HX, depending on our intention. And I'll tell you what they are. Okay, so large field inflation. So large field inflation has been done in a great detail by Will and Leonardo and friends, and then they find that inflation is very, very robust, and we found the same thing, right? So great, inflation is very robust in a large field inflation. But here what we are interested now is that, well, how do we kill inflation, right? So can we kill inflation? So what the next simulation we're gonna show you, so I'm gonna show you a movie soon, is that instead of using the box size to be the HX, which I think is what you used, no, you use HV? Which L, sorry?
L is the periodic length of your initial condition.
Yeah, it is L. So this the L is both the period, both the domain and the wavelength scale.
Right. So, but I mean, you would always set your domain to be L, right?
Yes.
Right. So now you're going to consider the
No, this is not a Hubble radius of the maybe we can have a discussion later. But this, I think this is different from what you did. But maybe I'm just doing something completely stupid.
Why are you assuming bigger? I guess that's.
Yeah, because we want to make a giant dark black hole.
Can you explain what you mean by that? I mean, even if you create a.
Sorry.
Even if you create a Hubble size.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to do. Not just the Hubble size or HAG, but the Hubble size of the vacuum space time, so it's like really, really big black. That's our goal. We never, as you can see, we never get there. But so we're gonna start with again initial expansion rate.
You could take like 10 times bigger than that, and it would still form the black. I mean, universe presumably is infinite, so I mean, it sounds kind of artificial that you set the box size on the physical scale that you're interested in.
Does it make sense? Maybe let me show you the simulation, then maybe it'll make sense after this. Right. So what I do and what you do is actually equivalent when the gradients are very, very big. So we can show there's a scaling argument that the two simulations are actually equivalent. But instead of scanning by the wave mode, we scan by the amplitude of the delta phi. So that's the difference that we did. And the gradients here are actually not so big. Like, you know, I know you reached 1,000 rho v, but we reached about 100 rho v. Getting 1,000 rho v is actually quite hard in the way that we wanted to use this ginormous box. So here's a simulation. So here's a apologies for this design for ants. I think. So you're not ants. I'm going to tell you what it is. So blue is space time is expanding, and then red is space time is contracting. So if you like, this is expansion. If you like, this is moral speaking, like Will said, that this is just if you like the conformal coordinates. So we're going to have delta phi is about 0.15 initially expanding k, and then here's what we see, right? So again, this, so you can see that some part of it starts to form a black hole, but not quite, and then it collapse, and then stop becoming black hole and get inflated away. So delta phi is 0.15 doesn't make a black hole. And eventually, if you run long enough, the whole space-time becomes homogeneous, and inflation occurs, and everything is good. And we are all very happy. Inflation survives, no black hole. So what about something? So broad conclusion, right? So inflation domain, delta phi is much bigger than M Planck, because this is the last free inflation. So, but the gradients that you're going to put in is much smaller than delta phi. So it never quite falls into a reheating regime. So if you like, the inflating plateau is so big that it doesn't quite matter how big, unless you really crank it up to super horizon, super Hubble delta phi, you never quite push it over. So it's very, very robust to large gradients. As we argued, gradient energy get inflated away very, very quickly. So even if you might hope that the gradient energy, which kind of behave like radiation, would stop inflation, but you have a ginormous vacuum energy sitting in the back, so that's going to win. So they're going to win. So if you like, large Q inflation is very robust to the large gradients, and this is just completely agreeing with what you're doing. So we have no difference. So but the Q large field, we need a giant dead black hole, and that's, we try to do that. And the argument is the following, right? So if you have a mode of wavelength L, which has some gradient density, so this, the gradient energy density will be roughly this, so it's like the gradient is delta phi square over L square, so some blob of length scale L. You start with some mass of some spherical blob of size L, so a big blob of size L. Then you can calculate what's the mass of this thing. Is this 4 pi cube L delta phi? You notice that it scales like L. So using Hooke conjecture, delta phi, which is what you need to make a big blob black hole, is actually, you know, is actually independent of L. So it's 0.25. So we run 0.15, no black hole forms. So let's crank up delta phi. We can make a giant dark black hole, right? So here's what we did. So we did delta phi is 0.5, which is, you know, not super big, but big enough. And this is how much our code can handle for the moment. So here we go. So again, blue is initially expanding k. So it's uniformly expanding k. And then something happens here, and then, you know, a black hole starts to form. So the rate means that it's contracting. So there's some region in space-time that's contracting, and then you can see that it starts to spike up because, you know, singularity is forming. And because the simulation, the visualization scale that we use, the black hole become very, very sharp, right? So this is basically a black hole, and here the code sort of crash. But here's black hole.
Can you remind us what gauge is this?
What gauge? This gauge depends on the gauge driver condition, so alpha and beta I. So this, if you like, one way. So the rest of the space time think of it as just basically FRW with conformal coordinates. So, and here is basically a black hole, so it's some different crazy gauge depending on what alpha and beta gets driven to.
Eugene?
Yo.
You seem to be also developing a cross. Is that an artifact?
Sorry, a what? What is a cross, sorry?
I don't know, a plus sign.
Oh, a cross. Oh yeah, I think that's a numerical artifact. I don't think that's true. Because we stick in I think it's a numerical artifact. I mean, we haven't really investigated deep enough. But for me, this is good enough for government where inflation happens.
But not enough to make you worry that something's wrong with simulation.
No, the Hamiltonian constraint is quite well obeyed, so we don't think there's anything wrong with that. And both Hamiltonian and momentum constraints are actually pretty good. Okay, good. So giant death black hole. So unfortunately, we try to crank it up further, and our code doesn't like it. So I think it's just mostly that we haven't figured out what the sweet spot for the gauge driver condition is. So I think with a little bit more tinkling, we can get it to work. But unfortunately, we couldn't get it to work fast enough for this conference. So watch this space. Okay, what about small field inflation? Right. So small field inflation, so we're now going to use a model where the inflation scale is 10 to the minus 11, so this is a much smaller field inflation. So if you like, now you can see that the delta phi of the inflation plateau, you just need 10 to the minus 3 amp Planck. So it's again sub-Planckian now. And we look at two different models. One is where we just have enough delta phi for just enough inflation. And one, we have extended range model. If you like, this cliff here, we actually extend it further, so we make it much farther away from the inflating regime. So, and the reason we did this is that because you are starting initial condition with some large gradient terms, if you just start with some big delta phi, this delta phi might go into the cliff if you have just enough. So if you like, you start with some initial kinetic scalar field that might push the whole thing down. So we look at these two different models saying that, okay, is this, so our intuition is that extended range is gonna be more robust than just enough, and this is true, but that's the reason that we look at these two different models. Okay, so, and again, we look at now, we know the weight, because the gradient energy we're gonna use is very, very small. So the box size is basically the actual Hubble size now. And we start with both, we start first now, we're gonna do constant initial expansion. And we're gonna, for fun, we're gonna do one that's actually initially contracting, and the answer is gonna be exactly what you expect. And then we scan the parameter using delta phi. So again, for this scanning parameters that we use, the gradient energy is now 10 to the minus 6 to 10 to the minus 4. So if like this is, interestingly, this is actually less than the Hubble, the quantum fluctuations, but okay, let's just try and see what happens. So, okay, just for just enough model with a very small gradient, so it's like 0.10% of the delta phi, inflation survives. So now I'm gonna plot the scalar field instead. So if you like, blue means that the scalar field is actually safe, and then red, the scalar field is not safe. So red, it means the pit of doom, right? So let's see what happens. So for small scalar field, so it starts to oscillate a little bit, but inflation wins quickly, and then it becomes homogeneous, and it ends up in some spot somewhere in between, and you inflate, and you get 64, and everybody's happy. Right. So this is for small field inflation with small gradient. So this is actually okay, and this is actually kind of nice and happy, right? Because we're gonna start with some fluctuation that's smaller than the quantum fluctuation. So if it's actually kills inflation, then we should worry. Okay. So this is fine. Nothing bad happens.
But
oh, so sorry. So the the vertical direction is just the same direction as the color of the plot. So there's no actual movement. I mean, maybe we should have just put it 2D and use the color, but 3D are nice, right? I just started a simulation of this one, right? Okay, so you run it, and it's inflation soft like tries to run, so everything becomes homogeneous, but at the corners, it falls into the bottom, and then it drags the whole universe down. And universe that basically right now what happens is all this, the entire space-time, the scalar field is now sloshing in the bottom. Right, so delta phi 0.005, which is about 50% of the inflating plateau actually kills inflation, right? So it dies in the pit of doom. And rho gradient of this gradient energy is about 10 to the minus 4. So it's not much more from the quantum fluctuation. So should we be worried about this? Of course, it depends on potential, but okay. So this is like the one plot I'm gonna give you in the entire talk, which is the number of EFOs on the y-axis and the simulation time. And this is a small fee inflation with small DeFi. So you can see that it inflates and then it keeps on inflating. Everything is happy. But if a blue is a small fee inflation with big DeFi, and it starts to inflate, but then after 3, 4, it stops and it dies. Okay. So this is one way to kill inflation. So we have successfully killed small fee inflation, although we saw a stack the decks, but at least we know what is the value of DeFi that we need to kill small fee inflation. So for fun, we did something small fee inflation with initially contracting K, and you, as you imagine, when you solve the homogeneous Friedman equation with H initial to be minus, the universe just contracts and die, and then here's what, and this is exactly what you see, right? So you start with some initial expansion that's green, which is all is actually positive, so it's actually contracting, so it contracts and dies. Right? So inflation never got started here. Okay. So for small field, the broad conclusions are the following, right? So inflation gets killed by being pulled into the reheating regime, even though the initial gradient is well within the inflating plateau. In fact, it inflates a little bit before it dies. The just enough model is less robust because you know you have more extra kinetic energy pushing the scalar field in, but this is not surprising. And again, not very robust, and you get rho gradients 10 to the minus 4 rho v. So can we have some local large quantum fluctuations that kills it? Okay, so this is the question I'm going to leave you. I do not know the answer to this. Okay, so the final thing I'm going to talk about is a varying initial expansion on contraction. So general initial conditions for K are actually hard to set up. So this is like just a true fact, right? So you have to solve some complicated elliptical set of equations. But there's a special case, there's a trick, I think it was found by Garfinkel many, many years ago. It's the ansatz, right? So instead of setting K to be a constant, I can set K to be some constant times phi, which is the scalar field profile, plus some overall constant over the entire spacetime. And the kinetic energy is no longer zero, so eta is the kinetic energy of the scalar field. Instead of zero, we put it to be minus C over 12 pi. So when you set these initial conditions, it turns out that the momentum constraints equation I trivially solve, so we can use our existing code to find the initial condition, and then we can run it. So if you like, we can have some initial condition that's actually varying in space, and we can make it someplace contracting, someplace expanding, at the price of the kinetic energy phi dot is actually not zero initially. But that's okay, right? Well, it's not the best thing, we would really like to find a general case, and we are working on it, but for now, this would work. So we can choose some C such that the space-time can be mixed initial expanding or contracting. And again, we're going to simulate this with a homogeneous wavelength where the size of the box is just the actual Hubble scale. Okay, so for varying expansion contraction, so for large field inflation with a cosmological constant, right? So and rho gradient is 1,000 rho v, so this is now very similar to what Will did. And the expectation value, or the average of the expansion rate is minus h, so it's actually smaller than 3h, which is the usual case, and it's varying, as you can see that some part here is actually expanding less than here, so expanding more here, expanding less here, and then but everywhere is still expanding. So some places expanding far more, some places expanding less, and we run it and see what happens. And not surprisingly, universe inflates, so it does this, it does a little bit. Actually, here it actually forms a black hole. And then again, this is, as Louis said, this is probably a numerical artifact. That's something that we probably haven't set up properly. But inflation survived, so everything's okay. Okay, so what about a large field varying cosmological constant where you have varying k instead, but you have some region that's contracting initially? So this is the initial spacetime that we started with. So all the blue means everywhere is expanding, but this little spot here is actually contracting. Right, so you have some part of the universe actually contracting, and the question is whether this is actually going to contract further or this is going to get dragged by the rest of expanding spacetime to inflate. So I think the answer is right here, inflation survives, actually here's what it does. So it actually drags the contracting part of the spacetime into the expanding type, and everything is fine. Eventually it will inflate later on. So at the end, the universe just inflates using the vacuum energy Hubble scale. And finally, this is the last movie I'm going to show you. This is work progress. Unfortunately, we didn't manage to finish the run because the code crashes. But the idea is that what happens if you not just have some small part in the space-time to be initially contracting, but equal amount, right? So if like the average value of the expansion rate initially is zero, so there's some part that's fully expanding, some part is fully contracting. Okay, the red part is the contracting part, the blue part is expanding part. And the reason that you see more red here is because we've taken a slice that is not convenient, right? So we've taken a slice where there's actually more red. So what we want to understand is that what happened if this starts to contract and this starts to expand. So our argument would be that if some part of the universe expand, then it's good. So, but can we handle this large gradient of k as it goes from contracting to expanding? And the answer is that we didn't manage to. So you can see what happens. So you can see that the contracting part actually start to contract a little bit more, and you start to see some contraction coming in. But this is where our code crashes, right? I think what happens is that the gradients are too big, and we haven't put in sufficient refinement. Our gauge condition is not quite good, so we are still working on it. But it would be really nice to see what happens for this one. This is a good question. I actually haven't thought very deeply whether or not. I mean, when k changes sign, right? So we know that there's some parts actually contracting, one part is actually contracting. I don't know if you can find some.
Yeah,
some.
I mean, like this corresponds to just like taking your initial solution for everything.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not sure your question, actually, to be honest. So,
so I'm just asking.
Okay.
I mean, is there some sense in which we can disentangle this gauge dependent quantity from actual expansion and contraction? Just understand what exactly is being put into these initial conditions and how it's different from the cases where
I'm not going to pretend I understand the question, so maybe I'm being stupid here, so maybe I can ask you after the talk to let me explain, can you explain to me, because I just don't understand, sorry. So maybe I'll talk to you a little bit later. Okay, so maybe I'm just being stupid. Okay, so this is actually the last plot I'm going to show you. So you can do varying initial small field varying k. This is really boring because the answer is too large. You know, if you start, remember the price we pay for this varying k is to have the kinetic term to be have some value, and it turns out that this is so big that it walks right into the pit of doom. Nothing happens. So I mean, nothing happens. Inflation immediately dies. So it's not very interesting. So we are still working on the general initial prescription where you can have varying k with eta to be small, but this is really work in progress. We have to write the code. Okay, so finally, the conclusions, right? So the last free inflation is robust to the pit of doom. It doesn't get dragged into the hole because the gradients do not grow fast enough and they shrink very quickly because of the distributed space that's looming. Small free inflation is not robust to the pit of doom because once gradient falls into the pit, it will drag the whole spacetime down. Does it mean that if the small field inflation is less robust than large field inflation, does it mean that we should expect high scale inflation and large primordial gravitational wave? Okay, this is the question Neil would like to say that this is a bachelor problem. But we are comparing large and small field, so does it tell you anything about fundamental physics, if you like? Right, and then finally, large field is robust to small amount initially contracting spacetime, but that's okay. But for general case, we still working on it. Okay, so that's the end of my talk. Thank you.
Questions? In standard inflation.
Sorry?
In standard inflation, mm-hmm. The old inflation, one of the arguments against inflation is that there are bubbles of inflation and the kinetic energy gets too big and starts causing inhomogeneities in the late universe, which is bad, because we're supposed to be getting rid of them. So what happens in this scenario? Do you get large inhomogeneities growing?
If you start with large kinetic terms?
Yeah, or large gradient for you.
Um, So one thing, right? So one is that you can start with large kinetic term, but if it's...
How do they disappear as the universe grows to the present time?
So you mean the kinetic terms or the...
Both gradient and kinetic.
Here, it just gets inflated away. I mean, because you can show that if you take some gradient energy term and you put inside some space-time that's inflating, it will just go like 8 to the minus 4, 8 to the minus 5, depending on the wavelength of the mode. So they really just, when you plug it in and solve the equation of motion, you see that the gradient energy just gets killed. So does that answer your questions?
Not really, but anyway, right. We'll talk about it.
I'm poor at answering questions today.
So, Eugene, so I definitely understand, like, if you have an inflaton field that has some average value that sits on the inflationary plateau, and then you have fluctuations around it, and the fluctuations in the inflaton field sort of take you off the inflationary plateau, then...
I think you mentioned that in your paper, too, yeah.
Yeah, Leonardo mentioned an example like that, too. But were you saying that you also found examples where sort of the fluctuations and the inflaton were all on the plateau and it still fell down? It still...
Yeah, the initial fluctuations is all in the plateau.
And so when you're defining the plateau, how exactly are you doing that? Is that the region where you could sit and still have several, 60 e-folds of inflation? That's the range in the field where that happens?
Mm-hmm.
So then...
Okay, I see you're saying that the plateau is actually, if you have one edge of the plateau, is actually, even if you let it run, it still gets 60 EFOs. Is that what you mean?
I'm saying, are you defining the width of this plateau, which you're still contained in, as the range in field space where you can have 60 EFOs?
Yeah.
So do you have some intuition why?
That's intuition.
Because, I mean, you wouldn't expect if the potential is, not falling very quickly at all in this whole range where the field is sampling, then you wouldn't expect it to have a strong effect, right?
Yeah, I actually don't have strong intuition on that. I mean, we were in a sense surprised to see that the answer to that. We expect, again, as you said, that if you start even if the scatter of your scalar is all sitting within 60 EFO, then it should not die.
Gradients push you off that
one. No, I can say that, but I don't have to quite prove it, so I'm not quite sure I can. Plausibly, there's plausible arguments that you can push it down, or some weird dynamics of the...
That's the only argument there's no other.
Oh, okay. It could be some crazy gravity scalar dynamics that we haven't looked far enough. If we just look at perturbative calculation, maybe we won't see it. So we were surprised. I mean, we were actually more surprised that it just takes so little to kill it. I mean, just rho gradients 10 to the minus 4 of rho vacuum, right? So that's uncomfortably close to the quantum fluctuation. So we were a little bit surprised at that. And we also done some others. We also done simulation and try to find that point. And the one that I show is actually probably, if you like, a critical point. So you only get like 3/4 of inflation and it dies.
So one comment that might be related to that, but I think it would be really productive to have some kind of gauge invariant definition of what we're calling a fluctuation. Because you could have a really tiny delta phi and a really huge curvature perturbation if you make a really weird slice.
Yeah.
So maybe there's some element of that going on.
Yeah.
So I was wondering if you think that it's useful to consider larger volumes for your simulation. In other words, if inflation is rare in the context of the initial space-time, but robust in the sense that if it's once it starts, it sort of takes over in any region. Then a larger simulation would be able to capture the rare case of rare.
That's the one. It would be the dream, right? If I have infinite amount of resources, would be to do some sort of like Eagle simulation of inflation, right? So some ginormous multiple, instead of just one Hubble volume, but 10 by 10 by 10 Hubble volumes, stick in some initial random initial condition and see how much percent of it actually inflate. This would be really nice to do. I mean, I don't want to say that we hope we can do it. Maybe like 3 by 3 by 3, I think we can do it. And I think we'll probably try this just for fun to see what happens. But we will probably, this is one direction we want to take it, but we are not quite sure if it's actually worth doing because it's going to take a lot of numerical resources. But on the other hand, you're right. I mean, it would be really nice to actually try to solve the, you've got to measure a problem by doing a very ginormous, like Eagle-style simulations of inflation with inhomogeneous initial conditions.
Any other questions? Okay, let's thank Eugene again.
Thank you.